This week on Art in the Air features executive consultant Lisa Bennett and artist PQ discussing the Gary Alumni Pathway to Students project to revitalize Gary with art and billboards. Next, actor Madison Mirren appears in the Toll Theater musical The Mad Ones, opening February 28th. Our spotlight's on the Ordinary Wonders exhibit, running February 28th through June 15th at Lebesnik Center for the Arts.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome for the first time to Art on the Air Spotlight from the Lebesnik Center for the Arts, the new curator, and she's not quite so new, been there about a year and a half, Whitney Bradshaw. And she's going to be meeting with us several times this year and updating us on things that are happening at Lebesnik. Whitney, welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you so much, Larry and Esther. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, it's so nice to finally see you in person-ish.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope we get to see more of each other.
Well, we will be. And just very briefly, because we want to give you time to talk about the events coming up, just a little bit of your background, because we're going to have you back for an interview, a feature interview, to talk about that in depth. But just real quickly, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I have been involved in the arts in many different ways for many years now. I've been an educator for about 26 years, both at the high school and college level. I am a practicing artist, and I've been exhibiting my social practice work across the country really heavily for maybe the last 7 years. I had taken a long break while raising my daughter. And prior to getting involved in the arts, I actually was a social worker, kind of a varied background. And I'm really excited to be curating here at Lebesnik. I was a curator for 13 years at the LaSalle Bank Photography Collection, which was later the Bank of America Collection. And I took 10 years off of curating while I was running the Visual Arts Conservatory at the Chicago High School for the Arts. So I'm very excited to be back curating and being able to work with contemporary art that is, you know, interdisciplinary.
Are you also a photographer?
I am a photographer, yeah. So my social practice work is really heavily based in photography. Okay. And portraiture.
So we really want to know about what's happening at the Lebesnik Center for the Arts. What's coming up in this new exhibit and maybe a little bit in the rest of the year?
Yeah, well, I'm really excited about the next exhibit, the Spring Show, which will open to the public February 28th and will run through June 16th. The exhibition's called Ordinary Wonders, and it's works by Jessica Labatt and Cecil McDonald Jr. Both of these artists are Chicago-based, and they both use the photographic medium in very different ways. But they do it to illuminate the extraordinary brilliance in the everyday. So each one of them really deals with banal subject matter, like, you know, family, domesticity, friends, but they elevate their subjects. But Cecil's work is all portraiture based.
It's fantastic.
It's so great.
Oh, it's so good.
Oh, you know it. Yeah, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Cinematic, gorgeous, portraits that appear to be candid, but are completely staged and beautifully lit, like a movie scene. So his work will be, it's a two-person show, so they each get like half of the center. So Cecil will take over the whole upstairs with his photographs from his project called In the Company of Black. And Jessica Labatt is going to do a really large installation in the downstairs Heinemann Gallery. She works with photographs and very staged work having to do with parenting, family, domestic life, motherhood. And her work, rather than being portraiture, is still life, stunningly beautiful, large format, still life photographs that often incorporate flowers from her own garden alongside toys and other detritus from family life. And she will be incorporating her own wallpaper into the space, mm-hmm. along with photographs that are both framed and probably unframed, kind of hanging off the wall. And then objects, sculptures that have been made by her children that'll be placed throughout the space, along with some other fiber work that she's made and sculpture that she's made.
Her work almost didn't seem like photographs to me. It looked like oil paintings. At first I thought, oh, these look like oil paintings to me. So it's like so interesting how those two medium, it's sometimes hard to tell. Like with some oil paintings, you think that they're photographs. They're just
they're so
meticulously done. Yeah, hyper realistic.
Yeah, I mean, I think Cecil and Jessica both elevate their photography to the level of more like history paintings. They're really stunning. I think that together, they're both kind of quiet, radical gestures of expansion and liberation in their work in different ways. That's why I wanted to bring them together. Because they're both using photography in very different, exciting, and beautiful ways, elevating the material and the subject matter, but also really expanding our ideas of what we can be as artists and how women and people of color, particularly Black middle-class people, are represented.
Real quick, in our last few moments here, tell us about the dates of the show, exhibits, and any special days like Family Day and Gallery Talks.
Okay, yeah, great. So the exhibition Ordinary Wonders runs from February 28th through June 16th of 2025. And we will have our opening reception on Friday, April 4th from 5 until 8 p.m. On Saturday, April 12th at 11:30, there'll be a curator tour that I'll be giving. And I'm hoping to also have Cecil and Jessica present for that. We haven't discussed it yet, but I'm hoping it'll happen. And then we have a family day coming up.
May 24th.
That's Whitney Bradshaw, curator at the Lebesnik Center, talking about Ordinary Wonders, and it's coming up through February 28th through June 15th. Thank you so much for coming on Art of the Year Spotlight.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you.
And a Spotlight Extra. Call for entries for the Art Barn School of Arts 2025 Juried Art Exhibit running April 4th through June 5th. Emerging and established artists over the age 18 are encouraged to submit their work. Learn more at their website at artbarnschool.org. Again, that's artbarnschool.org. Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Curtis L. Chrysler, Poet Laureate of Indiana, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Lisa M. Bennett and PQ to Art on the Air. Lisa is a speaker, entrepreneur, influencer, and multi-award-winning author. As CEO of Fearless Coaching, LLC, she helps dreamers find their path to maximize their potential. Lisa is also a partner and executive coach with Secrets, a career advice platform, as well as on the board of GAPS, Gary Alumni Pathway to Students.
P.Q. is a fine artist originally from Gary, Indiana, who enjoyed art as a child but developed his eye and honed his skills in the armed forces. He is a community leader and youth mentor. With over 35 years in the industry, his work has been featured in television shows, films, and commercials. He is the founder of Liquid Arts Studios in Los Angeles, California, and Metro Atlanta, Georgia. It is an arts collective aimed at helping disenchanted youth and young adults through art. GAPS and PQ will be collaborating on a project of revitalizing Gary through collaborative murals and billboards. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Lisa and PQ. It's really, really wonderful meeting you.
Thank you. Same here. Nice.
Pleasure. To meet you.
Well, how we always like to start our interviews, and this is kind of unique because we probably would have just done this as a spotlight, but since we had the opportunity to have both of you on, is kind of go into your origin stories, you know, your background. And Lisa, we'll start with you. Tell us about how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about that.
You know, so here's the
recording in progress.
The funny thing is I'm sorry. I got the question, but I can't even say it. My journey is interesting, because it's actually tied directly to the project. I grew up in Gary. I was a military brat born in California. My mom was raised in Gary, and my grandmother got sick when I was a small child. So she moved me, to the Gary community, but it is the Gary community that I'm celebrating through this project. And it is the reason for the career path and for the things that I've chosen. It's interesting because we picked the greatness of Gary to be the title of the project. And it's because of the greatness. PQ and I have been friends since we were sixth, seventh grade, something like that. And in our adult years, when we reconnected, we always talk about how we took for granted the greatness that was around us in Gary, and how when we go to other places, they never quite see it or understand the value of the community that we grew up in. And so we've toyed with this idea. But my journey is really about that, right? It's about being educated in predominantly African-American community, although it was still very mixed, I think, when we were smaller, but still predominantly African-American community, and taking the richness and the lessons learned and those things, and taking those. And I went from high school in Gary, Indiana, to Drake University, where I was probably one of about 85 kids of color. I mean, brown kids all together on a campus of 5,000 people. But it was because of what I learned in Gary that I was able to overcome some of the obstacles and barriers and deal with some of the things that I had not dealt with. I met kids who were at Drake, who were other brown children who had not who were questioning their identity and having problems dealing with a community that didn't quite reflect us. But I was really girded up in my self-esteem and knowing who I was. And I remember the Cosby Show premiered either my freshman or sophomore year, and I would have a lot of conversations with other brown kids or kids of color on the campus, and they'd say, "That's not reality." And I'd say, "Well, yeah, it is. If you grew up in Gary, we have black doctors and lawyers married to each other all the time. It's not an anomaly for us." That show Good Times was like, that's for real? That exists for people? I'll say it the way I felt it, like, for black people, that wasn't my reality. And so that helped shape a lot of what I do and how I do it. And growing up in this community then set me, I went from Drake to State University of New York. Again, my career path, I chose consulting. When you get into consulting world, I was the only African-American female client-facing consultant in my entire practice in the largest consulting firm in this world called Accenture. So again, always being sort of the one darker spot in the whole field. And so I'm kind of used to it. But that is what shaped my career path. And that's what continues to shape it to today. And just wanting to come back home and open pathways. And my passion project is GAPS. Coming back to Gary, wanting to get involved and make pathways for students who may be in the same predicament I was, who may need, who travels the same circles I was, and want to create some pathways and opportunities. So that's sort of my story, the short version of it, if you will.
I wish everybody could see. I mean, Gary has some of the most magnificent architecture and Absolutely. Buildings. I mean, it is so gorgeous. And it's
You know, I'm so excited by all the things that are happening. I was just at the Gary Public Library for an amazing jazz concert. I mean, everybody needs to know about the richness of Gary.
Yeah, I used to bring kids home from Drake University because they would say, you know more black doctors and black lawyers? And I'd say, not only that. And we would ride down Broadway. I say, now it's dilapidated, but look at the architecture.
Look at it.
The buildings are still standing. Right. The old Ross Clinic, which is now a bank and CWI and some other things are housed there on the building in Fifth Avenue. That is a gorgeous building. And I remember us being kids and hanging out in that building. And it was all doctor's offices, all professional level offices at that point. But it is.
Well, you just go down Fifth Street and I have to stop because the architecture is just so overwhelming. It's just like achingly beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I want to move on to PQ because I want to give him an opportunity to tell his background story. And then we'll talk about the projects and things like that. So PQ, same thing. How you got from where you were to where you are now?
Great, great. It's wonderful to be here. My story starts with I'm the last of 13 children.
Oh my goodness!
So it was a pretty packed house. One great thing about the house I grew up in, everybody was artistic, and I didn't actually realize that everybody in the world wasn't artistic. That was just my reality. Everybody could sing, everybody could dance, everybody could draw, and so I just got in where I fit in, and I could do some of those things. But drawing just seems to be the thing that just kept calling for me. And I say this all the time, that I didn't choose art, but art chose me. And so no matter how much I tried to do other things, art kept choosing me. And as a matter of fact, in seventh grade, about the same time I met Lisa, we had an art teacher who didn't think that I really made the cut as an artist. And he said, PQ, I don't think that art is your thing. Maybe you should try something else. So I went to band class and I did okay in band, but art kept calling me. And I just kept pressing to draw, even though I thought, well, maybe he's right. Maybe I shouldn't be doing art. And through the years, when I got to high school, I had a high school teacher, Mr. Stewart. Lisa knew I was going to say his name because I can't help but say
he was my fraternity teacher and I loved him.
Eugene Stewart was amazing. And I say that, you know, rest in peace. He took me under his wing. He saw something in me that I certainly didn't see in myself. He got me into college level courses for art while in high school. He got me a scholarship to the Art Institute of Chicago. But my father on the other end was like, yeah, me not knowing his story. My dad said, yeah, art is not a good path, a good career path. Maybe you should try like a real job. And he, who had been working in U.S. Steel, was close to retirement at that time, wanted me to have a good career. So I joined the Navy. I didn't know what else to do. And I was became a Navy illustrator. I'm sorry, first a Navy medic, hospital corpsman, actually. Did that for a number of years. And at some point, I just really felt disillusioned. I was really miserable. And a guy asked me, he said, well, what's your passion? And that was like foreign words to me. What's my passion? Like, you know what passion and work.
Who thinks about that?
Yeah, I didn't know those two things go together, passion and work. But I said to him kind of flippantly, a little bit sheepishly, like, art, I don't know, you know. And he said, well, you better figure out how to become an artist or you're going to be miserable the rest of your life. Yeah. And in a very particular way that I can only describe as divine timing, I had never met a Navy illustrator before I had that conversation with this guy, Jose. And a couple of days later, I met a Navy illustrator who saw my passion and said, you should try out and become a Navy illustrator. Well, I only had one problem. Actually, I had three. Those three problems were this. Number one, the Navy had trained me for 7 years to be a medic. They put a lot of money in me. Number two, being a Navy medic was very extremely critical to the mission of the Navy. And number three, there were 500 applicants for 12 spots to become an illustrator draftsman. And I certainly had no experience in this. However, it all worked out. And when the list came out, out of those 500 applicants, I was picked number 2 of all the artists that were chosen. Since, and what I have done is taken my my ability to do art and try to give it back to the community, give it back to youth, and help them find their passion, not just for art, but their passion for life, and find out how can they do what they were supposed to be doing here in Earth. So there's my long story.
No, I would like to ask about that portfolio, because I'm sure you had to submit a portfolio to the Navy. So what did you pull together? What did it comprise of?
So that portfolio entailed, they wanted to see some line work. So I had to do line. I had never done any pen and ink or anything like that. They wanted to see a gouache or acrylic painting. They wanted to see an oil painting. They also wanted to see like drafting work, because the technical name of the job is illustrator draftsman. Our technical or tactical job was map making and plans for strategic maneuvers and things like that. So it was a lot of things like that. So a lot of technical drawings and things like that. And I had never done any of that stuff. So
it's so interesting that first art teacher did you such a disservice.
I think just the opposite. Let me say this, and let me be very clear on this. So my first art teacher was actually a neighbor, and he was not the old-fashioned or the newfangled guy who says, oh, everybody's good. He wasn't the kind of person that was going to give you credit for something if you weren't good at it. What he did is he inspired me to work harder. So as much as I can thank Mr. Stewart, I thank Joe D as well for what he did, because he also pushed me to become a better artist. In her head, because she knows that to be true.
Right. But so did he, so when he said do something else, did he give you reasons though? Or did he, I mean, so how did he kind of direct that? Because from what I heard, it was just like he dismissed you without any, without any direction, I guess.
Well, just for the sake of time, I didn't tell the details of it, but here it is. He brought me to his desk and he looked at my work and he said, what is this? And he started going through piece by piece of the artwork that I turned in. And as I described it, he said, well, that's not exactly what I taught you guys to do. And that's not it that either. And he just kind of gave me a good analysis of the work that I created to say, this isn't exactly what he was expecting from a seventh grader doing art. And he just said, well, maybe you seem like you have a lot of skills. Try something else. And he did suggest maybe band was the thing for me.
Excellent. Well, Lisa, we kind of want to get back in, and we're going to bring PQ into how he's plugged into this. But tell us a little bit about the project number of GAPS, and you know, you have support from the Knight Foundation. But tell us like the founding motive for that, and then maybe some projects, and then how PQ comes into that.
You know, so it's really, we've been actually talking about the project and why the entire time we've been on. It is about, you know, PQ and I and myself and other people as we've grown up. So, you know, when you're a kid and you're part of a community, you take things for granted. It's like, that's the way it is for every kid. So the shock for me was going off, for example, to Drake University. We're a school where it wasn't a whole lot of brown kids. And the ones that I encountered didn't necessarily have the same experience that I had. So some of them, the good times experience was a reality. For me, that was not the experience. And so as we grow up and we go down these different journeys, undergrad, grad school, you get out into the world, you're young in your profession, you start to reconnect with your older friends. So the kids, PQ and I, like I said, seventh grade, that's what, 40 years ago? More than 40 years ago now that we've been friends. I have friends from kindergarten, first grade. And what we often end up talking about, and we get together, if you went to Westside High School in particular, we get together every year, at least once a year, for our all-class picnic that's in every July. But often some of us get together several times a year and from other schools because the community was so close. And what we often talk about is the greatness and the unique experiences we all had when we left this community that we took for granted, because all of this greatness was around us and we didn't realize it was that great because it was so every day. When we went off into the world and we met other children, who came from similar backgrounds in terms of color, and they had not had any of these experiences, and they didn't know anything about a Katie Hall per se. They knew they had Martin Luther King birthday happen, but that was in the 80s. I think we were in college when that finally happened. But we could say, wait a minute, Mr. Hall was he was our high school principal, as a matter of fact, when PQ and I were in junior high school, when we met, and Joe DeVance was my basketball coach, which was PQ's art teacher. So we had all of these. Quentin P. Smith was the principal that we all knew when we got to high school. He retired after our freshman year, but he was a red tail. So we start talking about all of this richness and things and experiences we had with these people that we took for granted. That was like, wow. Did we document this? How come we haven't documented this? Somebody needs to document this. And over the years of PQ and I talking about it, and PQ says something too. He talked about his artwork, and Mr. DeVance probably did light a fire under him, because let me tell you, by the time we got to high school, again, when we get together, PQ will tell you that he always questioned his own ability. And we'd be in high school looking at his artwork like, how in the world does he even have a third eye to see what he drew? We thought he was kind of geeky. We thought, this guy is so incredibly talented. And so again, because you're high school, you're kids, you're taking things for granted. It is those rich conversations that led us back to this. And I've been saying to PQ probably for about 5 years, PQ, we need to do something. And so the Knight Foundation had put out, I became familiar with them through my work in GAPS, the Legacy Foundation, and them helping us get GAPS off of the ground back in 2016 when we first started. And I was poking around saying, guys, there's some opportunities. We got to do something. And they said, voila. So again, my passion is always about the pathway. Like, how do I open a pathway or expose something that someone else has not already thought about, whether that's kids or adults? That is my passion. And taking PQ's passion of art and my passion of trying to find a pathway, we've been talking. We said, we're going to do this time. We're going to do it. And so I wrote the grant. I grabbed him and I said, but how do we get the buy-in from the kids? I mean, we don't want them to just look up. We want them to know not only are the people who are featured being awesome, but we are products of the same environment that produced those people who went out into the world and put their finger mark or thumbprint on it. And you can do it too. So I thought of no better way to depict the greatness than to have somebody with great artwork be able to do it. And so I called PQ and said, we're going to do this. And we did it in a matter of like days.
Yeah, I'm hearing divine synergy, you know, not only between you two, but between the community that was around you growing up. You know, it's really, and it doesn't always happen everywhere. It really like is so fortunate that you had that and you're able to pass it along.
So tell us about the outcomes of this, PQ or Lisa, about what the practical outcome of what you're going to do. I know it's about murals and things, but maybe explain that for us.
So a couple of things that we want to see happen. First of all, we want to create pieces of art that will be on billboards, buses, different things like that, that will, one, bring a certain level of pride to the community, to the kids that got a chance to be a part of it, to others who remember. If they see, I was just working on a piece of, as Lisa was talking about, QP Smith. I worked on a piece of Quentin P. Smith for another event that I'm working on. But we're gonna do some things for different legends around the city. And we want people to know who those people are, to be inspired by that. But the thing that I'm hope that most come out of this is that we inspire kids to realize the greatness that's inside of them and that they can move on and do something greater. Lisa?
Yeah, for me, it's to, PQ has probably encountered this, when you meet somebody in your adult pathway, they say, oh, you're from Gary. And they go, and I go, hey, let me tell you something. If you've never lived in Gary, don't you do it. I will turn into somebody else that's not so nice. Don't you do it. And that's because, again, it's the pride, the closeness, the what I want them to do. I want them to stand up when somebody says, you from Gary, and they put that frown on their face. I want them to remember the billboards, to remember the stories that we're going to educate them about, remember the people, and pridefully stick their chest out and say, yeah, I'm from Gary. What's your point? What do you want to talk about? What are we going to do?
Sure. Are you involving then students in actual doing the work also? I mean, hands-on?
We are.
Good.
We are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's baked into the project. We want to make sure that that each student gets a chance to work with the various legends that we're working, that we're going to pay tribute to, and that they, when they see the billboard, they can say, I was a part of that.
And so probably, you know, unfortunately, we're getting to our last couple minutes here, but we want to give you an opportunity to say, how can people find out about it, and where to get involved, and what's your timeline for different things? I mean, is this going to be just like a one-off, or is this going to be an ongoing project?
Ah, don't you want to know?
Yes, I do.
So PQ will be in Gary the first week of March to actually do the instruction hands-on with students that we're choosing to be a part of the project. There are going to be students in this between 7th and 10th grade. I think it's 7th and 10th grade that we have identified. We're going to choose 12 students. So we will be at the school in Gary, at a school in Gary with the hands-on instruction, and they will start assembling the project, the pieces of the project. We're looking to finish that project, like I said, in March, finish some of the artwork. And then it's all of the particulars, right? Getting it all lined up, getting the billboards and things all figured out and the locations. And we are looking till spring, late spring, maybe early summer to release the project, unveil the project to the entire surrounding community.
Will there be murals also?
Yeah. So the challenge was, how do we do this and not get stuck? And this is just, it's nothing to do with Gary's municipality, not get stuck in the red tape of where can you put a mural or not put a mural. So what we chose to do was go with billboards.
Right.
Excellent.
I think it's an excellent first start. Yeah.
And the other question too is how, where can people find out information online? Maybe if other people wanted to get involved other than students to support you, where's that information? Where can they find out about you?
We are, so you can always go to gapsgary.org. We have not put all together all of the PR stuff. Zanetta reached out to you, so you know we're starting our marketing pieces now. But the idea is that we'll have gapsgary.org, that they can find out more information about the project itself. We will be rolling out a website where people will be able to go there. We're hoping to purchase versions of the artwork in the future. And all of this is to help continue to support the youth and the community in Gary in general. But we're still building everything out.
Sounds great. Well, we appreciate you guys both coming on Art of the Year. That's Lisa Bennett and PQ, the artist. They're going to get the project GAPS, and you can find GAPS is GAPS, G-A-P-S, Gary.org, and I think they'll have more information there. Thank you both for coming on Art of the Year and sharing this wonderful story about, the revitalization of Gary.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Art of the Year listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show, whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners? Email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hi, this is Morgan McCabe, freelance theater professional and writer for the Northwest Indiana Times. You are listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. Thanks for listening.
We are happy to welcome Madison Miron to Art on the Air. Madison was exposed to performance at the age of 3 years old. Her grandmother would act out the Wizard of Oz, and Madison would be Dorothy, and her grandmother played every other part. That set up an artistic trajectory. She graduated with a degree in theater and a minor in communications with a media production video editing emphasis. She performs in plays and musicals in the Chicago area. She will be performing in The Mad Ones at Toll Theater in Hammond, Indiana. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Madison. It's very nice meeting you.
Nice meeting you as well. Thank you for having me.
Well, Madison, you're actually going to represent the whole show. The director of the show had referred you to us, so we decided to do an in-depth interview with you because, all of our spotlights for the opening of your show is there, and it's called The Mad Ones, opening February 28th and running through March 2nd at the Toll Theater, and it's a musical. So, and Madison is with us to tell us a little bit first about herself, and I always like to say it this way, Madison. your origin story, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Madison.
Okay. So I grew up in Oxford, Michigan. It's about an hour north of Detroit. That's where I grew up. I lived with my mom, my dad, and my grandma. And play was a huge part of my upbringing. Was shared about me, my grandma and I would do a lot of acting out The Wizard of Oz and other stories. And that's kind of how my dad would play with me, too. There was a lot of role play in my childhood. So my dad and I had this huge doll collection, like 30 dolls. We called them the children. Each one had its own name and personality. And we were always acting and storytelling with these dolls. And so my dad and my grandma really just like ignited this spark in me when it came to like using my imagination and telling stories and playing. And so from a young age, I was like making up skits in my basement with my friends, and my dad would record us. So we'd make little stories and productions just in my basement. And that's kind of how I got my start, just through
<It's so>
play.
Sweet.
Yeah. So I give a lot of like, I credit my dad and my grandma a lot to just like my joy for play and storytelling. And so then as I got a little older, my parents put me in classes and camps. So I, did a lot of like youth theater projects and productions. And then I got more serious about it in high school. I did like all the plays and musicals at my high school, which was a lot of fun. And then I went to Hope College, which is in Holland, Michigan, and I got a degree in theater. So I studied theater there and I had a really great experience, and I got to dip my toes into a lot of areas of theater. So I did performance, playwriting, some sound design. So I've kind of dabbled in some different areas, some directing. And then after college, I moved to Chicago because I just wanted to be in a city that's like rich in art and culture
and theater.
And theater, yeah, an area that just has more opportunities. And I've been here for almost 4 years now, and I've been really lucky to make some wonderful connections and to get pretty plugged into the storefront theater scene here in Chicago. And so, yeah, it's been a blast. I also have worked as a theater educator. So right out of college, I was teaching theater for 3 years. I took a step back from that to focus a bit more on performance, but I still have a real love for teaching and working with children as well. But yeah, now I'm in the Mad Ones, and it's kind of fun because when I was in college taking voice lessons, I sang some songs from this show, and I just fell in love with these composers, Kerrigan and Loudermilk. And so then when I found out that this show was happening, I was like, oh my gosh, I've listened to that music. I love that music. And so I was really excited when I got the offer to play the role of Kelly in this show. And the music has just been so wonderful to get to explore and sing. And the story is just like heartfelt and moving. And I'm really grateful that I get to be a part of telling a story that is like so raw and honest.
Well, I want to ask you some, with all the experience that you had in shows from high school or on, what are some of your favorite roles and shows that you've been in? It sounds like you've done a fair mix of straight plays and musicals, but you know, tell us about some of the shows that you love best and roles you love best.
Yeah. Oh, it's always a hard question because I've had so many wonderful experiences. One of my favorite roles, I was Sandy Cheeks in the SpongeBob musical. And that was really fun just because that's such an iconic character. And I got to really bring her to life. So that one was really fun. That was in Chicago with a company called Surging Films and Theatrics. Some other favorite roles include Cinderella in Into the Woods. That one was a lot of fun, getting to play a princess. I had never played a princess before, so that was a lot of fun. I did some plays in college that just were like such compelling, raw, honest stories. And I love getting to tell those types of stories. One show that I did was Crooked, where I played the mom of a 14-year-old, which was kind of fun. I was pretty young to be playing a mom, but it was like a fun role. And I also chopped my hair for that one. So that was like the first time I was asked to like cut my hair for a role, which was kind of cool. Immersed me in it in a different way. Another show that I did that I loved was called Cry It Out. That play is hilarious. It's by a playwright called Molly Smith Metzler. And that was another really fun role. I also, one of my favorite shows that I've done more recently was Rocky Horror.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that show was just fun because I've never, I've never like expressed myself on stage in such like a free way. Like we were, you know, we were dressed a little promiscuously up there. It's Rocky Horror after all, but I never thought I would be comfortable appearing that way in front of an audience. And I found the experience to be very freeing, and it like boosted my confidence in a lot of ways, just being able to like express myself on stage in such a free way. So those are a few highlights.
Musically, you've touched a little bit on your training. And of course, in this day and age, as an actor, you really almost need to be able to do the big three. You need to sing, dance, and act. The old thing in musicals of there are singers who sort of move and there's dancers who sort of sing, that sort of is a lost thing. Do you still study any of those post-graduation?
Yeah, so I study voice. I had taken a break from voice lessons. I had just been auditioning a lot. And then after getting cast in the show, I was like, oh, I want to get back into lessons. This music is some of the most challenging music that I've ever gotten to sing for a show, which is like really exciting. But I also was like, I need to brush up a little bit. So I started taking voice lessons again. And I'm with a lovely instructor. Her name is Mary Laguerre, I think is how you pronounce her last name. But Mary, she's wonderful. So I started studying with her. I've also, you know, done like workshops and stuff here and there, but post grad I've really been auditioning a lot and learning from, you know, various directors and music directors that I've worked with on shows. But I feel like a lot of my experience post grad has just been in like actually doing the thing. But I do kind of miss being in class. I think there's a real possibility that I'll go to grad school within the next few years. I want to keep learning. And I feel like outside of school, like, yes, I'm learning just from being in productions, but I do kind of miss being in class. So it's something that I would like to do more of. But with the actor schedule, it can be a little busy. It's hard to find the time to take class.
So you had said, and so did you audition for The Mad Ones? Because you had presented it like you were offered the role. So
I did audition.
Okay.
Yeah. I just, I was offered the role after auditioning.
After audition. Okay.
Yeah. I did have the pleasure of working with the director. His name is Dion. And I worked with Dion on a production last summer. So we were able to like, I knew Dion and I knew that like we collaborated well together. So when I knew that Dion was directing The Mad Ones, I was like, oh, I really want to audition for Dion again. The show that I did with Dion over the summer was called Breaking Up Is Hard to Do. It was a jukebox musical with music by Neil Sedaka.
So how did you find out about the Toll Theater? You know, now that you're based in Chicago, how did that come on your radar screen?
Yeah, so I actually have some friends that have worked at the Toll previously and who have had a really great experience working at the Toll. So I followed the Toll's Instagram. I was like on their Facebook. I knew that they were out there. But having previously worked with Dion, and I knew that Dion was going to be working on this show. So that was this was like my first opportunity to actually work with the Toll. Because it's a little far away, I hadn't auditioned for them previously. But The Mad Ones is just such a beautiful show. I was like, I'll drive 3 hours if I have to. I'll drive however long I need to do this show.
Well, you should camp out with someone in Northwest Indiana. Maybe that might be save you some driving time. There you go. When I was at the Center for Visual Performing Arts, and we had a lot of Chicago actors that would come down, and they ended up finding people kind of stay with down in here. And when we were doing Equity Theater, the Center doesn't do that anymore. So, but
yeah, anyway. I do have a carpool going on with my friends that are in the show, so that helps.
So is there any role that you are looking forward to do down the road? I mean, musical or otherwise? I mean, is there saying, oh, I really want to be, what is that role?
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of dream roles out there. When I was younger in high school, like, I always got cast as the mom. Like, I don't know if it was just because I was tall or had, like, a maturity about me. But I definitely found, like, a love for playing those, like, mother roles. And I'm, like, a little in the professional theater scene, I'm a little young for that right now. But I do have some mom roles that I would love to play one day. I would love to be the mother in Fun Home, the musical. She just has some like really beautiful music. Another mom role that I'd love to play is Diana in Fun Home. Or not Fun Home, I just said Fun Home. Yeah. In Next to Normal. Diana Next to Normal. Yeah.
So really you mentioned directing. Well. Is that something else you want to pursue more of?
Yeah. I have been lucky to have some directing opportunities in Chicago, but I would love to have more. I am keeping my eyes out for things to submit for as they come up. But I have found that like a lot of companies in Chicago, like they have their resident directors that like regularly direct their shows. So I do think it's like a little bit harder to get in the directing world.
Yeah, it is. And you have to build a it's kind of one of those catch 22 things. You have to build a resume, but the only way you build a resume is by doing it.
Yeah.
Right. Are you ever looking outside the area for roles? I mean, you know, yeah. Chicago's, I mean, theater is a theater rich environment. In fact, one of my former students is executive director of the Imposters Theater Company at the Den. So that I know they're doing creative things all the time. I mean, kind of like new works and everything. But, you know, any venture to New York, L.A. or other places?
Yeah, I've actually seen some of the Imposters work. I've auditioned for them. They're awesome. Really good people. But yes, I am open to traveling. I like my home base is in Chicago. I have like a comfortable home. I like love it here, but I'm totally open to picking myself up and going and living somewhere else for a little while, wherever the work takes me. Over the summer, the show that I did with Dion was in Indiana, but it was a contract where I went and lived there. So they provided housing and I lived elsewhere, which was kind of fun. It kind of felt like being at summer camp or something. I have like an audition coming up for a cruise ship. So I'm keeping my eyes out for different opportunities and I'm totally open to traveling wherever the work takes me.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM.
Well, I know we have a couple professional companies, the Canterbury Theater here, that's in Michigan City, and then the Dune Summer Players Theater.
Yeah.
And both of them are probably coming up in their audition season. So, I mean, that's pretty close. I mean, the Dunes always puts their people up in cabins and things. So, we talked about directing and everything, but what are you looking for down the road, like 10 years? Where do you see yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think grad school, like I said, is a real possibility. I do really have a love for working with children. And like, that's kind of that I got my start when I was really young. And like, I had mentors that I looked up to who really inspired a love for theater in me. And like, I hope to do that for young aspiring artists. So I could see myself like, maybe having my own company where I put on shows for adults, but also host like classes and workshops for young children who are trying to get their foot in the door in the theater world. So that's something that I've definitely thought about. But that's like a very large business endeavor. Right. And I don't think I'm there yet, but possibly down the line, I could see myself trying to have my own company where I get to produce work, direct work, possibly star in shows, but also have, you know, an outlet for children who are interested in getting involved in theater.
Let's look at something else. You talked about, you know, working with kids and everything like that. Would you maybe do that even in a school environment, you know, work at a school system and anything, become like the theater director there, which, of course, you probably need a teaching credential for most of those situations. But would that be something you're open to?
Yeah, so I worked 3 years for a school called Michigan International Prep School. They're a virtual charter school, and I was a theater teacher there, but it was completely virtual. So that had its own set of challenges because so much of theater is about being in the room together, that exchange of energy between the audience and the actors. So that had its challenges for sure. I would be open to working in a school, possibly. However, there's a lot of kind of strict laws in the education world. Like I have a ton of theater experience, but because I didn't get a degree in education, my degree is in theater, a lot of schools wouldn't be allowed to hire me just because I don't have that education degree. But it's kind of interesting in a lot of states. I've looked into it because I am interested in being a theater educator. You actually need to have like your education degree is in a primary discipline like history or English or science. And then you need like a secondary theater endorsement. So like I went to school for theater. Theater is, you know, where my expertise is. So like in order to teach in a school, I would have needed to also study this like primary discipline like history or science.
Or English.
Unless it's Or English.
English, a lot of the, in at least high school level, English and sometimes speech teachers are the natural ones they tap for those things. You don't have to do that. But yeah, it's, well, let's talk a little bit about the auditioning. We have a lot of people that listen to this and maybe want to do that. So tell us about the experience of auditioning. I mean, some people, it varies from person to person, but tell us about your experiences going to auditions and what preparation you need and everything like that.
Yeah, well, it really depends on the audition, what they ask for you to prepare. But the two places that I find most of my auditions are theaterinchicago.com and leagueofchicagotheaters.com. Those are like awesome resources for actors trying to find auditions. Also, playbill.com has a lot of auditions and job postings as well. But typically for an audition, if it's for a musical, you'll need like a 16 or 32 bar cut, which is like 30 seconds to a minute and a half of a song. So when I'm auditioning for a show, I try to find a song that I feel kind of gives the same vibe or feel of the show that I'm auditioning for. And I also try to sing songs that I feel like show off my personality. I find that I personally book more auditions when I sing stuff that is more like upbeat and comedic. Because those are the types of roles that I often play, more of like the quirky, silly characters. And so, yeah, I feel like I'm still kind of learning like what works best for me personally. But yeah, find a song that you love, because if you love to sing it, odds are the people watching you are going to have fun watching you. When I sing something that I'm not crazy about, I can just tell I'm not connecting to the piece in the same way. And I'm sure that the casting directors can kind of sense that as well. So yeah, sometimes you need a monologue for auditions as well. But yeah, I've gotten a lot more comfortable with auditioning over the years. And I feel like I don't get as nervous as I used to, which is nice. The more and more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it.
It's like, it's a job interview is really what it essentially is. And you have to, I've always told people in the audition process that if you're not getting cast, they're not rejecting you as a person, they're rejecting the character or things that you're not looking for. And sometimes the audition you go to that you don't get cast, a director or sometime down the road, remember that person that we had come in for blah, 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 and they'll give you a call and everything like that. Okay, equity card, where are you on that? You know, they're changing the rules a lot about that to make it somewhat easier. And yet once you get the card, it's sort of, there are some restrictions. So tell us about where you are in that journey.
Yeah, so I am what's called EMC. So I have worked at an Equity House before. I worked with a Hope Repertory Theater. And so by working with an Equity House, I was able to join the EMC program. That program is going to be no longer a thing come 2026. But right now, because I'm EMC, I'm able to get seen before non-equity performers at auditions. So it's kind of a little perk for me for right now. But I've considered joining the union, but there's so many wonderful storefront theaters and smaller theaters that are non-union that I love to work with. And if I were to join the union, I would be essentially barring myself from working at those theaters. Like, I'm having a blast working at the Toll Theater. I would love to work with the Toll Theater again. And if I joined the union, I would not be able to. So I definitely think equity is something that I might consider down the road, but I just don't think that I'm there yet.
Yeah, it's very restrictive. The best status that used to be was what they called equity eligible, which is kind of like the EMC you're talking about. That you had some experience, you still got into the door for auditions like that, but everything. Well, we have a few minutes left. Tell us a little more details about the show, The Mad Ones.
Yeah, so The Mad Ones is kind of a coming-of-age story about a girl named Samantha Brown. Samantha Brown is learning how to drive. She's trying to get her driver's license, but it's not going too well for her. And while she, this is like kind of a spoiler, but not really a spoiler, because you find out within like the first 10 minutes of the show. But Sam's best friend, Kelly, who that's who I play, Sam's best friend, Kelly, passes away in a car accident. So, and it's while Sam is trying to get her driver's license. So this kind of, the story is about Sam trying to make these big decisions that you have to make when you're a senior in high school. Am I going to go to college? Am I going to get my driver's license? And she's also trying to move through the grief that she is dealing with after losing her best friend. So it's about friendship and loss and grief and being a teenager, trying to figure out what direction you want to take in life. And it's also about just like living your life to the fullest and doing what you want to do, because you only get one life. So we right. should be doing what we want to do and doing what makes sense. That's how I live my life. And I feel like I'm learning even more how to live my life that way through playing Kelly. So that's really nice.
How many people in the cast?
4.
Wow. So it's that when you're working with casts of that size, it's kind of an intimate experience. How long have you been in rehearsal? Because this will air the weekend before your show opens.
Yeah, when did we start rehearsal? We started in January. Yeah, we started in January. I can't even remember exactly what our first day of rehearsal was. But we open on the 28th. I feel like we're in a good spot and we will definitely be ready to open.
Excellent. So it's called The Mad Ones, February 28th through March 2nd. There's a Saturdays and Sundays. It's a musical with our guest here. It's at the Toll Theater. You can find out information at tolltheater.org or call the box office at 219-938-8780. And that's at 5205 Holman Avenue in the beautiful downtown. And you can see our guest today, Madison Miron. She'll be on there in the show and you can see her there. Madison, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air, sharing your acting experience, your life, and break a leg on The Mad Ones.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
We'd like to thank our guest this week on Art in the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.